What's up, everybody? Josh Wilson, and this is the Big Dog Podcast. These next couple of weeks, we are celebrating 1 year anniversary of the podcast launching. And so Jonathan and I thought it would be fun if we kind of recapped some of our favorite moments over the last year and some of your guys' favorite moments. So what you're going to be hearing today are some of our literally favorite moments of a couple episodes that took place over that last year. And that's what's going to play out over the next several weeks. So no guests live in the studio. I'm not sharing thoughts. We just know that there's so many new listeners, you know, over these last 12 months, and we've grown so much in recent months. We want to kind of recap those highlights for you. So that's what you're going to experience. I hope that you love it. Hope that you share it. And we're going to be back in the next couple weeks with some amazing content, some incredible guests, and I appreciate you guys so much. We'll see you soon. But as you're learning these things, is your primary crew learning these things along the way with you?
Absolutely. Or,
okay, so as you're growing and adding to the team, you know, your foundation, your crew, your base crew, they're the type of guys who want to get better, they want to be challenged, they want to learn more. The disconnect with growth has been with more of those support roles. Yes. More entry level roles and stuff.
Yeah. So ideally you want to hire somebody that knows exactly 100% what to do from the get go. Like, I would love to hire somebody that's smarter than me in installing pavers or intricate designs on decks and things like that. But it's not easy to find in this industry. And I think this is where it makes it very difficult, is the fact that the guys that you really have to train the people that are on your crew right now,
right,
to grow with the company, because you can't just find those guys. Those guys that have that experience are out there trying to start their own business.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Fortunately, you know, you can almost train a guy to a certain level, and then all of a sudden that guy decides to go start his own business. I'm sure it's like that in a lot of different 100%. Situations, but I think it's compounded in the landscaping industry because, I mean, especially like grass cutting. I mean, you see how many grass cutters are out there, especially when the economy tanked back in, you know, 08, 07. Yep. It's like all of a sudden everybody has a mower.
Right. But you made the comment a little while ago about, hey, you pull up to the light and you're like, the left of you, the right of you, across from you, it's just trucks and trailers and logos. Like, how do we differentiate ourselves? Because from a consumer standpoint, I just need somebody to cut my lawn.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's unless there's something special that you're looking into. And 90% of the landscape companies start and finish at cutting lawn. Mm-hmm. That's it. Mm-hmm. Then you've got, at least from my perspective, you've got this 10% number that get into lighting, that get into irrigation, that get into sod, that get into more intensive things like the paver work and stuff and design. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a much smaller group. But if everybody's just sitting there at the light and you're sitting there at the light as a consumer and you're just seeing these trucks and trailers, you don't know that of who does the specialty stuff and who doesn't. Cause you're still mowing lawns. You still have crews cutting and doing maintenance, right?
Yeah.
And then you've got your crew that's out doing the specialty stuff. And so, yeah, the guys that are more skilled, that know they add a lot of value, if they're not feeling used in a good way and fulfillment, yeah, they're going to try to bounce and do the deal. Or they feel like they can do these things, and they don't think about the difficulties of running a business, getting the jobs, hiring staff, and all. It's just like, well, they don't like the way you correct them that day.
Yeah.
And so they're like, see, I'm going to do it. And next thing you know, tomorrow they've got a truck with a sticker on the side of it because it's that easy to do.
Or they jump to another landscaper,
whatever it may be, because there's plenty out there and everybody's looking for people right now. Mm-hmm. I feel like landscapers are always looking for people regardless. But like in our industry, it's the same thing. You train them up, you teach them, you know, and it's like, well, I'm just going to do this on my own. Well, okay. Good luck. I wish you the best. But they don't understand what it takes for there to be opportunities to earn day in and day out. Like, your guys want to work. They're working because you've got work for them.
Yeah.
You have jobs in place that didn't just happen. Like, you didn't just wake up today and have a successful business. You've been working on this thing for how long? Since high school?
Yeah. I mean, high school, but yeah, 03 practically.
So 18 years. Yeah. You know, just overnight success.
Yeah.
That we have steady work every day and my trucks to drive, you know, my equipment to use.
Yeah. And I appreciate the guys that have been sticking with me, you know, the longest, and the more they learn, the more they can grow and the more they can make, you know, and, you know,
for sure.
It takes a special person to understand that.
Yep.
And understand that there is a business side of things. So I try to explain that
clearly
to my guys and just go from there.
Not everybody that's going to click for, right? No. And like, you could have the most skilled employee who's just tremendous. They add a ton of value and they know how to work every piece of equipment. They know how to cut, to design. Yeah. They can do everything. They'll never understand the business side, and they don't need to, but they need to understand that they're valued by you. And that you appreciate them showing up every day and that they execute at a high level. And that's why they stay with you, you know? And so they can understand those things, but sometimes like, I don't care about the business. Like, I just want to get out here and run this equipment. That's what they love. And that's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, so when I hire people, I always ask them, I said, okay, so we have a wide range of things you can do.
Right.
Okay. You have a little experience, but I can teach you anything you want to do.
Yep.
So here are the different aspects of my company. We got grass cutting, monotonous, day after day, same thing. If that's you, cool. Let me put you on that crew. If you just want to come to work, punch the clock, do what needs to be done, same thing every week. Then I got other skilled labor that I need to get people on board with. You know, if you want to do pavers, I'll teach you how to do pavers.
Yep.
You know, and you'll make more money doing that, but it's going to always be changing, but it's hard.
Yep.
I mean, in the middle of summer, we had that heat blast a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
And I mean, my guys hung in there, and I mean, it felt like 110 degrees outside, and we're out there laying pavers in the full sun.
Right.
And just drenched, and you know, they stuck with it. And, you know, that's where the opportunity is for individuals to come aboard and grow. And I, you know, I have goals well beyond right now in my head that, I'm looking forward to in the future is breaking it up into separate companies, and I need people to run those separate companies.
Yeah.
And I want to hire within because they know the system and the way things go already. So that's the opportunity that somebody could have is to literally run the company, a section of the company.
Yeah. Division,
you know, and I mean, I'm still looking for those type of people now.
Yeah.
You know, we need people that vibe. You know, I hate drama.
For sure.
You know, that's the number one thing. Don't bring drama to work.
Leave it in the car.
It's one of those things. It's like, I leave my situations away from here, you know, handle it when you're at home or whatever.
Right. And that's tough too, because guys, particularly like in your work, I mean, they're spending a long days together. There's physical labor. They're sweating together. They're bleeding together. You know, they're spending more time together than they are with, you know, family, friends, you know, and whatnot. Yeah. And so inevitably they're going to get close. So what do you do with people you're close with? You talk, whatever, but so easily that day can just go from a mood standpoint to just dropping because one dude starts bitching about something. Then the next one kind of piles in on it. And you're sitting there like, guys, can we let's just work. Let's just get this done. we could get out of here. Like, let's just knock it out. Let's execute at the level we need to. And that's tough because you're on the job. Your mind is thinking about 8,000 different things. And it's not dismissing their frustrations or concerns, but the noise of it, right? There's enough noise in our heads as business owners and operators.
Yeah.
Like, you just kind of want to take the machine and swing the bucket and wipe everybody out, you know, and you love them, but you just have those days, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody has those days, and, you know, and we can deal with it to a degree.
Sure.
You know, and I try to help people out, giving them my advice in the situations and such, but you know,
you got to execute. Can't always be therapy.
Absolutely.
And therapy is important.
So I have a quick question.
Yeah.
So did I hear you say that you don't run ads on your business?
We do not.
You do not. Okay. So that's really interesting because I'm not sure if you've heard, but the last episode that we did with the guest was Scott. Mm-hmm. He's the marketing guy, real big on ads and SEO. So I find it cool that opposition between ads and not running ads. Yeah. Could you speak to how you run your business not doing that?
Yeah. So we run our business, hate to say it, but like correctly. Not that people need to advertise that don't run it correctly, but I learned from early on that if you follow up with clients' needs and you fully fulfill their needs, you completely satisfy that customer, then they're going to recommend you and it's going to be returned tenfold. And I believe now that I've been in business, of course, for 18 years, it's something that comes natural is the referral base.
Yep, for sure.
And I'm comfortable with the size that I'm at.
Yes.
So there's some people that want to be nationwide. There's some people that want to be statewide. I've reduced over the years my distance of doing jobs. I don't go on the south side anymore for any more grass cutting and things like that. I'm mainly on the peninsula and into Williamsburg. We still do some stuff on the south side, but I've just become comfortable in business and I've realized that I have more leads than I need.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I don't even fulfill I could easily just go through my customer base and just call them and say, hey, how you doing? And unfortunately, like I just don't. I mean, that's one thing that I kind of wish I did better.
Sure.
But just the everyday being so busy and I'm just comfortable.
But the thing is though, you're comfortable. And I think people will take comfort as two different things. Like there's comfortable and there's settling.
Yeah. There's comfort and then there's complacent.
There you go. See, he's got better words. He's smart. I told you. So you did. But that's such a key thing because
I'm still grinding.
You have clarity on who you are, who your business's identity is. And for like honestly, the stuff I'm talking about in the episode that dropped today, that's live, has everything to do with the comment that you just made. Like you have complete clarity and you have a vision for where you want to be. Mm-hmm. You're not chasing what other businesses in your industry are doing. You know, you've 18 years in, you've been through so many different things, different seasons of the business. You know, the things you like to do, you know, the things you don't, you know, the things that you do well. You know, the things that you don't, you know, from a leadership standpoint, where your limitations are, where you excel, you know, what you want your days to look like. And that doesn't mean every day looks that way. Mm-hmm. But if most do, that's a great place to be. That's a great place to be. And there isn't this pressure for unnecessary growth. Mm-hmm. And here's the reality though, too. If staffing was different, you could take on more of the leads that you aren't able to do. Cause even though you got all these referrals,
100%,
which is so key, you're not, even if everybody, one of those referrals wants to work with you, cause it was just a bomb ass referral, you're not going to be able to accommodate whatever timeline they may have for themselves. So they're going to go elsewhere and you're comfortable with that.
And this is all industry specific.
Sure.
I mean, there's plenty of businesses like your own that can grow.
Yep.
And it's just the facts of being a landscaper. You know, I met a guy maybe 10 years ago while I was buying some equipment and I was like, why are you selling this equipment?
Yeah.
He's like, because I had about 125 employees. I'm down to 25 now. I'm making more money now and I have a lot less headaches.
Yep.
And I go, So it was just really interesting to think about. I mean, especially in the landscaping industry, you know, I've grown to 25 or 26 employees.
Yeah.
And we're down to 12 to 15 and I'm a lot more happier now.
Yeah.
So it's just the niche that I've, you know, I'm comfortable.
And people lose sight of that. Like you're at half the staff you were at your max.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm way happier. This is way just happier. Easy. And like, you don't have to get sucked into this growth thing. And the thing is you are growing. But you don't necessarily have to grow in the way that you thought that you did. Mm-hmm. Nick, hit us up. Just tell us a little about you, family, you know, business. What's up? How's everybody?
Hey, what's up, guys? Nick White, Off Leash Canine Training. I am the owner and founder of Off Leash Canine, 143 locations, about 580 trainers now throughout the U.S.
So crazy.
Kind of throughout the world because of London. So now I have to say world.
That's amazing.
So I started Off Leash. A little background on me. I'm a former U.S. Marine, former United States Secret Service. And when I was in the Secret Service, that's where I really kind of started getting into dogs, learning about dogs, stuff like that. And what's funny is, you know, now it's the largest dog training business in the country, and one of the most well-known and celebrity clients, and the list goes on and on. But, you know, I kind of joke with people that I wasn't this like entrepreneur mastermind when I started. A funny story, very few people have heard. I was in the Secret Service. I had a 2010 Nissan Titan at the time.
Nice.
And my truck payment was like $432 a month. I still remember it, 423 or 432, one of those. And I started really getting into dogs, learning a lot from a lot of really good people. And I started it kind of as a side hustle.
Okay.
So, but the problem is, in the, for those that don't know, the Secret Service is a very demanding, very high paced, long hours, a lot travel jobs.
Secret Service.
So we're working a lot. So I was on midnights at the White House, and I would get off my midnight shift, which was about 6 a.m. Then I would drive to a park, because at this time, again, it was just a small side hustle,
right?
And do lessons. So usually my first lesson would start at like 7:30 in the morning. And so I would drive to this park, change in my Nissan Titan into now my like t-shirt shorts out of my Secret Service attire, knock out a few lessons, get home at noon, shower, sleep, wake up at 6 p.m. and then literally just repeated that. And my goal, I was like, all right, because then I was charging literally like $25 per lesson.
Yeah, sure.
And I was like, okay, if I can get enough clients to pay my $432 truck payment,
yeah,
then like I have a free truck off this like side hustle that I enjoy doing. And it went from that side hustle to pay my $432 truck payment to where it is now. So
yeah. And now you could probably cover like a $500 note and you go full five in and
exactly.
You're
yeah. Now I can get the Tesla Cybertruck when it comes
there
out.
There you go.
So yeah, that's kind of the long story short on the background of kind of where I came from to Off Leash. And for those that don't know, since then, I was the host of America's Top Dog on A&E. I've, you know, been on a lot of things, a lot of different news, media.
Yeah.
I did training for a lot of celebrity clients at this point, everywhere from Jake Gyllenhaal, Ryan Reynolds, John Cena, you know, Max Scherzer, UFC champion John Jones, and literally the list keeps going.
Crazy.
Logan Paul. And so, yeah, that's kind of a little bit of background. And when I first opened my facility in Woodbridge, Virginia, about 2 years in, I just got that facility right before Josh here kind of looked at getting his dog trained.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I only had it. I mean, because you came in
2013.
Yeah, 2013. Yeah, early 2013. And I started the business in mid 2010.
Yeah.
So I just got that facility probably a year or so before nice. This young man by the name Josh Wilson calls me. That's again when it was very small. It was me and one other trainer really at this time. So I was taking all calls at this point. And he said, hey, you know, I like your training. I like your videos, but I live in Virginia Beach. You know, it's like a 4 hour drive from your facility. I have this dog. I'm looking at getting her trained. And I'm like, man, this guy's crazy. He's willing to drive like 7 hours round trip,
1 hour class,
to do a 1 hour private dog training lesson with me. And again, keep in mind, guys, like, and not that I'm like someone special now, but that, like, I was literally kind of like nobody at that point. Like,
yeah, for sure.
I was unheard of, like, in the world of dog training, really. So now it would make more sense. Since I've built this, you know, a right. lot of people in the community know who I am, but then like no one, so I'm like, man, this guy's willing to drive 7 hours round trip to do 1 hour private lesson with me. Is this guy insane? So yeah. And so Josh showed up, knocked out his private lessons every week for what, 8 weeks? Was it eight?
Yeah. We did four in a row and, you know, we were doing pretty well, Charlotte and mm-hmm. I, and Logan, who's sitting in the studio today, hanging out, he came up with us on a couple lessons. And then we took a gap. I spread out the advanced classes like every 2 or 3 weeks.
Help mitigate that drive time.
Yeah, that trip.
You got the foundation, which carries you through.
Yeah. I didn't want to get rid of this dog anymore. And I was like, oh, this is legit. This is working great. And so we spread it out a little bit. So it was probably, we did the lessons all together over the course of about 3.5-4 months. Mm-hmm. And it was legit.
Yeah. And so, you know, Josh did unbiasedly did a really good job with his dog. And, you know, I could tell he's put in the work and stuff. And, you know, just one time he's like, man, you should open, you know, one of these down in Virginia Beach. You would kill it down here. And I'm like, oh, you think so? He's like, yeah. And we started talking. And now 8 years later,
yeah, we're wrapping up year 7, going into year 8. January will be 8.
And he's killing it. So
it's crazy.
It all worked out for everyone.
It's crazy. And Devin, I mean, she was not happy.
About the drive or
about the training? Just the money, the time. But I give my wife a lot of credit. She's solid as can be. But she knows that if something to me like just feels like, I know it doesn't make a lot of sense, but I feel like this is what we're
something
supposed to do.
Something inside tells you. Yeah.
Like she does have a lot of trust with me with that. And I didn't envision any of this. Oh, yeah, never. I mean, who would?
Yeah, right? Nobody.
It's ridiculous. But you got to pay attention because sometimes, you know, the universe is trying to direct you. You know, the universe, course. God, whatever you choose to believe in, if anything, there are bigger forces than ourselves. And there's opportunities. Everybody
Everywhere.
Has opportunities.
Everyone.
And people act or they don't.
Correct.
And so, you know, we did. We made a decision. We talked about it for a while mm-hmm. before we did it. I was like, man, I'm really loving what I'm doing.
You had a good job.
This is, you know, I'm making good money. I mean, this is a thing. And we talk about this often. When we decided to do Off Leash, we thought, and when I told Nick, I said, yeah, I'd probably train a dog or two a month, make a couple bucks, maybe do a nice
trip with the kids. Yeah, I can afford Disney once a year, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that's literally probably an example.
It was my equivalent of my Nissan. Like, right. I can pay off this small bill.
Yeah, you know? That's what I could do. Yeah. And it blew off some steam. I really enjoy working with the dogs. And, you know, and Devin, though, when we started talking about doing it as a business, because she knew my background, like, he doesn't half-ass anything. You know, we'll see what happens. But it's just crazy to see what you have built and continue to build based off that decision. And the motivating factor back in 2010 mm-hmm. when you started was not this.
Oh, not at all.
And it's not where this is going to be 10, 15 Correct. Years from now.
Yeah.
But it was a simple decision.
As doing what I loved.
Yep.
And if I can pay a truck payment along the way, so be it.
Yeah. But then it's like, oh, I have talent with this, skill sets with this. Not only can I teach the dogs, I can probably teach other people. And so at what point, Nick, did you start to realize, like, were your friends starting to notice, like, what you were doing and making, you were getting a little busier, maybe making some money? Like, what was that stage that got to where you were either hiring a trainer or you were creating opportunities for friends who weren't necessarily in Northern Virginia
Correct.
To have that first or that second location, I guess.
Yeah. So before we get into that, one thing I always like to tell people and use this as a kind of a teaching/talking moment is for everyone listening, before we fast forward to that point, I had to make the decision first to quit the U.S. Secret Service
right,
yeah. because the business I did have now, Josh Wilson, the Joe Zitzelberger, and I had to make a decision like, okay. And I wasn't doing that well this time. Keep in mind, I was just doing what I loved, you know, but as I said, the Secret Service, a very harsh schedule. So I was burning both ends very strongly. I was doing dogs for 5-6 hours a day. And then I was doing Secret Service 8-12 hours a day. And I got to the point where I was like, okay, I have to make a decision. I can't keep doing this. Not good for my health, not good for my sleep, not good really for anything.
Right.
And I decided, obviously, to quit the Secret Service, which I was a 28, 27-year-old, you know, making $110,000 a year government salary, full government benefits.
Yeah.
I was 8 years into a government retirement, 4 years Marines, 4 years Secret Service. And the teaching moment that I want to talk to everyone about now that everyone's kind of caught up is there's not a single person in my life at that time, not my mom, my dad, my brother, no best friend, not a single person in my entire life that supported that decision. Not one.
Yep.
Everyone said, you're stupid. You're making a horrible decision. You're quitting a $110,000 a year federal government job that took you a year and a half to get. Most people, I mean, the Secret Service is 3,000 people in the world. Right, most people never get it. And they're like, and you're giving all of that up to train dogs at an elementary school playground. Like, are you insane? So the point to take away from that is don't listen to people. You know, if you feel good about it and you're passionate about it and you feel like that's your thing, don't listen to what other people say. And I genuinely feel that a lot of people in life aren't successful because they listen to other people and take 100%. The advice of other people.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Cause so many people, everybody is that comfortable part.
Correct.
Right. It's comfortable.
Yep.
You thought I was crazy to come to Northern Virginia, 6-7 hours
to do a 1 hour longer lesson.
Yeah. Logan, how long do we sit in the car that day driving back? I mean, we had to come down through
Northern Virginia the traffic
Shore because it took us 8 hours to get home. I think that one day and people won't do that. That's crazy. That's inconvenient. That is uncomfortable.
And
everyone says
literally
that's crazy.
Yep. Everyone. And when I say there's not a single person in my life that supported my decision, literally my mom, they actually did the opposite. They're like, you need to think this through.
Right.
You're not thinking a lot. Like,
and not out of malice.
No, just
out of fear.
Yeah. Fear for me, essentially.
Because it's fear for themselves.
It's like, you've done so well at this point in your life. You've got a great government job and you're about to throw away your life to pursue this crazy pipe dream that you have in your head.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not out of bad intention, but unfortunately for most people, it does create a bad thing in their life. Cause how there's a lot of people in the world right now that listen to those people.
Sure.
I would argue most people listen to those people. And one thing I've always been firm on, and I wish everyone would be, is you need to believe in yourself even when other people don't believe in you.
Absolutely.
Cause there's going to be a lot of those moments. And there's going to continue to be in my life and your life and everyone's life where maybe I do something even crazier, you know, 10 years from now. And there's going to be all those people saying, you've done all this in your life and you're about to throw. That's the big takeaway for everyone is, you know, is you got to believe in yourself even when others don't.
Yeah.
And, you know, now a lot of those people in the Secret Service who's like, you're crazy, you're stupid. Like I heard it all are literally some of my employees now. That's the big thing that I wanted to get out of the way first is, you know, believe in yourself and don't listen to the opinions of others.
What were we talking about earlier in the van? We were talking about, you know, people get focused on, we were talking about another dog training business, something unfortunate that happened and people were coming to me asking for comments and stuff. I'm like, I don't have a comment. It doesn't affect me. It's a sad situation. But I don't know the details.
Focus on yourself.
I focused on my team, my business, my family, and to make those tough decisions, like you have to have blinders on and earmuffs, everything at the same time. You got to be laser,
especially with the internet, social media.
You got to be laser focused, you know, on what your intentions are, what your mission is, and you got to drown down all that noise because it's not going to be easy if it's different.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody, some people, will come at you out of malice.
Correct.
But the people that matter and that will hurt you the most, if you're that person with an entrepreneurial idea, or that drive, you know, your family's full of doctors and you're like, man, I'm going to go park ranger or I'm going to be a lawyer. Family of doctors don't want a lawyer in the family.
Correct.
You know, you're supposed to be a doctor. And they're wondering what the hell you're doing. You've got to be built a certain way to work through all that.
Mentally tough. You have to create mental toughness, I would say.
Yeah.
To drown out the naysayers and the negativity. That to me, I think that's what a lot of it is mental toughness and not start believing other people's
disbelief.
How
many times in those first 12 to 18 months were you like, shit, my mom was right?
Well, right? The good thing is for me, and again, I think you can go either way with it. You know, once you reach that fork in the road where everyone tells you you're an idiot, you can go one way or another. Some people say, oh man, they were right. I should have listened to them. Where for me, it wasn't revenge, but it was almost like, I'm going to prove to 100%, you,
yep.
like now I was super motivated before,
yeah.
but now I'm really motivated
because yeah.
I know that you don't believe in me. So I'm going to prove you wrong now.
That's right.
And clearly at this point, I think everyone agrees I've done that. So.
You're doing okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, two Christmases ago, I bought my mom a house. So
that's dope,
for a Christmas present. That. Yeah. So she has slightly more belief in me at this point.
Oh, for sure.
And again, as you said, like I have great parents and, you know, great family. So it wasn't out of like malice. It was concern.
Yeah.
It was like, hey, you are not being logical. You are being crazy, which if you dig deep, when you think about it, you kind of are. You know, it's like, wait, am I going to quit a $100,000 job to train dogs at a park?
Yeah.
You know, when I took 18 months to get this job, I'm halfway into a government retirement. So when you actually look at it from a very factual pro-con perspective,
yeah,
it does not add up. Yeah. So I get it.
Yeah, but when you add in the pro of getting to meet John Cena, gotta take risks,
right, Jonathan? I mean, but it is, it's so funny. And that's where, like, when we talk about a lot on this show, you know, you've got to keep that focus on why you're doing what you're doing. And because what we talk about all the time, Jonathan, those little steps, those little wins, mm-hmm. those little building blocks, right? It doesn't have to be a home run out the gate, but you get enough singles. You know
how you get a first down is two to 3 yards
that's
at
right.
a time.
And that's you just got to keep chipping away, and you can't, the noise is just a distraction.
Yep.
You know, everything's a distraction, and it's whether, and the people, unfortunately, that will be the biggest naysayers yep. are the people closest to you.
Generally. Yeah. And, almost always, actually,
you know, cause like, who gives a crap if some random person.
Yeah. You're like, whatever.
Like,
you're a stranger.
Literally don't know who you are,
that's correct.
You know, but when that friend, and we had one,
the person you trust, and,
right.
You know,
when I was leaving the church, one of my best friends, bro, don't do it. And I was running both for 2 years at that point. I was burning up 95 coming to DC. I mean, it was crazy. I'm falling asleep on the highway. I'm stopping at some random hotel in Richmond, you know, sleeping for 2 hours, getting back to the house and going to work and, you know, just crazy stuff. And when I was like, yeah, I'm going to go all in on this. Huh? What? Why? But it's like, if you know, you know. But you also know, if it doesn't work out, I'm going to know I left nothing to chance. Though.
I tried it. I tried all I could.
Yeah, there was nothing to chance.
And unfortunately, I think most people go through life without taking that chance. They go through life mm-hmm. playing it safe. They take that safe job at the factory, even though they're a phenomenal artist or a phenomenal graphic designer or a great dog trainer or whatever, whatever their thing is that they love. But unfortunately, most people, and again, I think it's because they listen to those people.
Yeah.
They go through life playing it safe. Oh, I got a good job. I got good benefits. I got, you know, the parking space out front of the office. Yeah. Like, if I could like talk to everyone in the world, that would be one of the things I would talk about is, you know, as you said, worst case scenario.
Sure.
You try to pursue that art. You try to pursue and you give it your all. It doesn't work out. All right, cool. You go back to that factory job, that job as a vet tech,
right?
That it's always going to be there for
people
you.
Are afraid of the risk. This is the thing that I started thinking about it this way. I don't know exactly when, but I think it's key. People always focus on the risk of doing something, but they never think about the cost of not.
Oh, it's very true. Yeah.
And it's like, okay, this is scary, but what is the cost of me not doing
correct.
It? Like if I didn't try, because if I tried,
at least now you know.
And it hit.
Yeah. When?
Wow. Where would we be?
Like, where would you be? You know,
right.
You'd be in the same spot.
And that's, and you know, if I keep going, if I avoid that risk, I still have risk.
Oh,
I still have risk of the business I'm working at mm-hmm. going under.
Yeah.
They could lay me off for any given reason. They could, you know, do whatever. They're in complete control. But what did I give up? What was that cost? Because I didn't pursue that passion, that
correct.
Art. Think about all the people we know that, like when I grew up, some of the best athletes didn't play the sport.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
And they would have been freaking
could have
incredible.
Been phenomenal.
But they didn't have the discipline. They were unwilling to take that next mm-hmm. step. It's like, well, I don't want to resist. But the cost.
It was absurd. You know, there's a really good motivational speaker that I like a lot named Les Brown. I know you're familiar with him. And one of the things along those same lines he talks about, and I really liked his perspective, is he said, you know, he speaking to thousands of people, and he says, what's the richest place on earth? Like, where do you think the richest place with the most money? And people raise their hand. They're like, oh, Fort Knox, you know, Bank of America, the World Bank, you know, all of this. And he's like, all those are really good, but they're all wrong. The richest place in the world is the graveyards. That's where every invention, every idea, every business that every person's had inside of them, that they never pursued that business. They had a great idea or invention in their head.
Yeah.
And they had, here's how it works, but they never did anything with it. And that all of those died with those people. And he's like, really think about it. If you could add up all of the business ideas, inventions, and innovations that were in people's heads who's died to this day, it would be trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars worth. So he's like, the richest place in the world is graveyards, where all the ideas, businesses, and inventions died with the owner that never pursued them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's a pretty harsh reality.
Well, and we think about all this, like, people we would say special have made like huge impacts on the world, you know, just on the technology side. So you think about Bill Gates, Steve Jobs,
Tesla.
Think about Tesla and Elon Musk and stuff, right? It's like, the special part to me isn't what they brought. The special part to me is the dynamic in which, like, the mentality that they were willing to do.
Oh, it's crazy.
They were willing to, like, eat shit sandwiches for, like, years and years and years and years and years and just go all in on this concept.
Yeah.
When they had the same thing. They had people telling them, are you kidding me right now? What are you doing? When you leave that plan B, like, I'm a big fan of no plan B, right?
I 100% agree.
I don't have a backup plan.
Right.
I have my plan, and my plan can be fluid.
Sure.
Because I'm going to adjust to what I come about. But there is no plan B. No. And I think that when people have, like, well, I've got this backup plan just in case. I mean, you got to be wise, right? But the wisdom should be built into plan A.
Right.
You know, to some extent. But I feel like when people make moves as aggressive as you guys did, if you have a very solid, safe plan B there, subconsciously, I think everybody plays to plan B.
100%.
And it holds you back from really making that big risk at what you're going for.
Right.
And so you're saying, hey, look, we've got 6 weeks to figure this out. And it's not necessarily in that scenario, like, we have 6 weeks to replace my salary, but we've got 6 weeks to close this gap to where we can buy another 6 months.
Right.
To where we can flip that into buying another 6 months.
Right.
You know, and attack it and create what you guys have now created 10 years later. That's awesome.
I'm a huge believer in plan B only gets in the way of plan A.
Mm-hmm.
Too much parachute becomes problematic.
Yeah. You know, I had a t-shirt on, as my big tail was on the treadmill this morning, and it says run the play on it. And, you know, it's just a reminder of run the play. We have the plan. We know what it is. We know the steps we have to take to execute. Like, if things are hitting the fan, like, are we running the play appropriately? Right.
Right.
And we were on a show that aired today. Jonathan made a reference to players' contracts and, you know, sharing the playbook with them and all those things. And just to go with another sports analogy, you know, teams don't have one play. You know, there's not one setup. There's not one strategy. But there is the plan. There is the goal.
Sure.
And there's a million micro decisions that play into that.
Right.
And what is the appropriate play at the appropriate time? And put all of your energy and focus into that strategic play.
Right.
And so this t-shirt, I just love it. It says run the play, and it's got like a little routes, like, of the receivers running and right, the running back. Yeah, it looks like a chalkboard, like old school, like coaches, you know, chalkboard, but it's little dollar signs and cents. it's like run the play.
Right.
And I love that. You know, plan B gets in the way of plan A. It does, because we want to, people instinctually look for safety. And they play it safe. And I don't blame them.
I get it.
I make those decisions probably daily without even knowing it.
Yep.
But that importance of keeping plan B out of the way of plan A is a big deal.
Yeah. And it's important to be nimble, and it's important to understand when you have to take a new path because, you know, wherever you were going isn't going to work.
Right.
But any kind of, plan B that is an automatic of, I'll just go get a job.
Yep.
is going to deter any success I think you're going to have long term in your own shop.
Agree. Totally agree. I mean, yeah, don't work plan A to death when it's obviously not working.
Right.
Nimble.
Right.
Be nimble.
Yeah, you got to know when plan A sucks. But
there becomes a new plan A.
You need like plan A subpart one, right. Not plan B.
I mean, you talked about the young family. Like, I can relate with that a lot. So 2004, Logan was born. Mm-hmm. And late 2004, right before he's born, Devin's probably 7 months pregnant. I left my job, opened my own mortgage shop, took on leases, hiring people, all this stuff. And everyone, Devin's family, Devin's friends, like, what the hell is he doing?
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure our family thought we were out of our minds.
I mean, out of our minds. Now, so 4 or 5 years later, market crashes, tanks, we lose everything, bankrupt. I mean, completely just wrecked and destroyed. And everybody, several, I'm sure, had a, I told you so. You know, here's the thing. Even if I was with the job that I had, it impacted everybody.
Yeah, the market
still crashed. Would have been totally screwed. Like, we right. still would have been in a total shit show.
Yep.
We just personally had liability for all of it. Right. So, you know, but hey, we rebuilt and it's fine. But like, when we did that, there wasn't a backup plan. Like, we were all in and it worked well for a long time until the world decided that it wouldn't.
Right.
And if I wasn't so young and arrogant at that time, I would have paid more attention to the writing on the walls and made different decisions. Back then, though, I believe that my plan A was better than everybody else's plan A. And if I'd kept working it, I'd just outwork everybody and we'd be fine.
Sure.
And I believed that all the way to bankruptcy court. I mean, that was the deal. I wasn't nimble. I wasn't willing to change. Now, fast forward 13 years, 8 years into another business that we're doing okay with, man, I'm about as nimble as can be. Not physically. I'm working on getting more nimble physically.
Right.
But man, if something's not working, we're going to change that mug.
Oh, yeah.
If somebody on my team, you came in, you met some people, you know, on the admin team and stuff. If they give pushback, challenge us, because they're the ones doing the tasks. They're the ones doing the work. Doesn't mean I'm always excited about the pushback and the changes they're proposing or the question. It doesn't mean I always agree. But we've changed stuff a lot. And that can be hard for a growing organization, because sometimes people will feel like, hey, it's not stable. There's not stability. There's constant changing. What's going on? But when young businesses are growing, you have to be able to move and transition.
Oh, yeah. The number of times that we use the term growing pains in our office
right.
on any given day.
Yeah.
You know, because it's just the nature of the beast. I mean, you know, I guess at the end of 2019, we were a 5-partner shop. Like, that was it. It was just the five of us. We had gone through an intentional degrowth period.
Yeah.
After growing way too fast at a certain point, we had scaled it all back. It was just the partners, and we brought on the fifth partner.
Yeah.
And then from that point forward, we've, you know, 3 or 4x'd our revenue. We're now a team of 16 or 17.
That's awesome.
You know, we run a strong intern program with the local colleges. We have all the services that we provide under our corporate umbrella.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Versus having outsource. So, I mean, you have to be willing to see where things are going
right.
and how to take advantage of that, and also know when you're on the wrong path.
Yeah. And being able to provide those solutions, like you talked about, clients are like, hey, can you do this for us? And you're like, yeah, we can do that.
Sure.
And now let's figure out how the heck right. to build websites. Let's yep. figure out how to do social media marketing and advertising. Let's figure out, man, a lot of our clients have this need for commercial video work or photography. They're asking us for this, how we should bring this in.
Yeah.
You know, and how do we figure that out? So as you've grown, and like when I look at your partners, it looks like each of you guys bring this separate skill set and specialty.
Yes. Yep.
And that have allowed you, and I presume that those relationships were acquired and grew. They were previous relationships, but they came in-house as you guys grew and that need became apparent where outsourcing it no longer made sense.
Right. And that's exactly how our growth has happened. It would, you know, a matter of, you know, we start to get enough requests for a certain service and then we outsource it for a certain amount of time.
Right.
Then we start to run numbers and we realize, you know, this is consistent enough that it makes more sense to us have more control. And while we're taking a financial risk by bringing it in house, we also reap the financial rewards.
Yeah.
Because the margins are always better when it's under your own roof.
For sure.
So that's how everything has grown. And then the partnership group has kind of grown in kind because we all have different skill sets.
Right.
And bring something very different to the table. So when we get to a point where we know, okay, we either want to bring a new service online or we have a service that we know we need to take to the next level and right. we don't have that expertise in house, that's when the real growth begins internally.
Yeah.
That's where we start adding people. That's where we start adding service lines under the consortia tag.
Look, I could talk about cookie text and just business and the same thing. Like when you get your passion, when you're lucky enough and disciplined enough to pay attention to getting your passion in alignment with your purpose, mm-hmm. and it doesn't have to steal from anything, it is limitless.
Yeah,
I mean, you can just run with it.
Sean Aker studies happiness, mm-hmm. and he has a quote I really like. And he says, happiness is the joy you feel as you're working towards your potential.
Yeah.
And I think that's it. It's hanging on my fridge because those moments of joy and that sense that I am continuously trying to be the best version of myself and yep. put the best product out there and be a good boss and a good human.
Yeah. It's funny that you said that because the episode that dropped today while we're in the studio recording, actually, you know, I reference like, I want to be the greatest. And it's not the greatest dad of all time. It's not the greatest like entrepreneur of all time. I don't feel this desire to be like the greatest husband of all. Like I don't need any of those accolades. I need though, the people that matter in my life that when it's all said and done to all believe at their core, damn, he was the greatest version he could have been of himself.
Of Josh Wilson.
Like that's it. Yeah. That's it. And like my dad could not have been a greater dad to me because I'm not being compared to other dads. Mm-hmm. I want Devin to know when we're no longer physically together, whether she departs or I depart, because that's a reality of what will happen. Mm-hmm. There is so much joy in knowing he was the greatest husband that he could have been to me. There is nothing that he could have given me more of. And it's not of stuff and things like yeah. of me, like of my heart, yeah. my core, yeah. what it can be. And so this episode that dropped is I'm talking about my dislike of myself in the physical form and what I've allowed myself to become and be because I'm misrepresenting my potential.
Yeah. And I've caught clips and I've caught right? clips of a few things lately. So I know what yeah. your current.
And so it's just like a weird thing. And it's like. Get your focus, you know, and figure out like how you do become that greatest version of yourself. It's not about anyone else. It's about yourself.
Have you read or listened to Atomic Habits by mm-hmm. James Clear?
Yes.
Yeah. Every action I take is a vote for the type of person I want to become.
Yep.
And consistency over intensity.
Yeah.
And so I'm not knocking the 75 hard, but yeah. that's intensity.
Oh, it's super intensity. Yeah.
And that, you know, you sign up for a marathon. That's intensity. If you say I'm going to go out and I'm going to run more days each week than I don't.
Yep.
And even if it's only around the block.
Yeah.
In 3 years, I'm a runner.
That's
so
right.
Who am I? I want yeah. to be a fit person.
Yeah.
And you work toward the person
yep.
you want to become rather than I want to run a marathon.
Yeah. And I think that to that point, it's so smart. And that comes back to business too. People see what you talked about the nervousness of starting the business, right?
Yeah.
And it's because you're like, it's a business.
Yes.
And that's so intimidating. And if I was like, I need to lose 80 pounds, that's so intimidating. That's so intimidating. And that's why, and I've always attacked it that way from a very immature aspect. And this time, the last time, mm-hmm. I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about today and what I need to do. And it's the same way I approach my business. And, you know, Lord willing, like the business continues to be successful. Lord willing, my wife continues to love me. My kids continue to love me. And, you know, and I just focus on the day and being that best in the day. It doesn't matter. And then, boom, you wake up and 11 years later, you're pumping out more cookies than you've ever pumped out in your life.
Yeah. And you sit there on the couch and you think to yourself, I want to be a fit person that can pick up her grandkids.
Yeah.
And so what does a fit person do? Does she stay here on the couch and eat this bowl of Chex Mix and watch this reality show? Or does she go for a walk around the block?
Yep.
And, you know, listen to something that might make her feel better about life. You know, because it's every decision.
Yep.
Every decision.
Single one of them.
And it's not 75 days of decision or one marathon worth of decisions.
You're right.
It's just little tiny incremental choices.
In every aspect of your life.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's so simple.
You look great. You look excited. You look full of energy.
Oh, I know. I know. Now, I may completely just fall out in the next 45 minutes. So we might have to keep it short. But look, so I'm so excited you're here in the studio today. We talked about these deposits, the relational equity that we have with each other.
Absolutely.
And it's been a minute. I thought it would be funny to take them back. Because gosh, we met in fall of 2010.
Yes. Correct? Wow, dude, that's a good memory.
Fall of 2010. We both had started working at Water's Edge.
Okay. Yep.
And we're like knowing each other for what? A couple months.
At best. We didn't run across each other that much either in the office.
And what happened? How do we really get to know each other, Larry?
Well, I mean, it was a crazy story, really, because, you know, we had a mutual friend in the office.
Yes.
Who came to me and he said, Larry, he said, you want to go hiking on the Appalachian Trail? And I mean, I was pretty good friends with this guy. And I don't know anything about hiking, dude. Like, just nothing. So I'm like, I don't know, man. He's like, come on, man. It's going to be fun. Me and Josh and Josh's friend is going. So I want you to go. So like Josh, you know, we're kind of friends and then he's going to have a friend and I want to have a friend too. So I really want you to come. And I was like, okay. So he got me to go on this trip. He like talked me into it and we were so excited. I was going to ride with him. You and John were going to ride together and we were going to go up there, get everything. Well, dude, the night before we're supposed to go, I get a call and my buddy's not going.
Right.
So
this damn fool texted me yesterday. Actually, I haven't talked to him in a hot minute and he texted me yesterday sharing some love and I need to hit him up today.
Okay.
But yes, that's really funny.
Yeah. Well, come on now. I love the guy. I still love the guy.
Same.
But he dropped the ball all over the place.
Didn't we take him shopping?
We took him shopping like two nights before. Yes, dude, exactly.
Jonathan, we are running around Walmart and Bass Pro getting all kinds of gear.
Mm-hmm.
Because this trip we'd been planning for a month.
A month and a half. Yeah, absolutely.
Homeboy had prepared not even like an ounce for this trip.
And we're going into the wilderness for days not to come out.
Yes.
I've been in Bass Pro Shop like twice. I'm a big proponent of leave nature alone.
Well, that's fair.
But yeah, I don't blame. I mean, I think my comforts have shifted over the last 12 years.
Yeah,
I prefer. But it is a good time. But you need to be prepared. And what people consider levels of preparedness, I would say vary from personality to personality. And we'll get into that a little bit. So someone not to be named, let's just refer to them as Stefan.
Yes. Okay. That's great.
Stefan bailed.
Yeah. Stefan said,
my belly hurts.
Yes. He said, my belly hurts and I'm not going. I was like, dude, I can't believe you're doing this. I was like, I mean, and Josh, no disrespect. I was like, I don't know this guy, Josh.
Right.
And I don't know John.
Yeah.
I was like, but they're counting.
His wife worked with us all.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. I was like, I don't know these guys. And now you're bailing and I'm going into the woods for 3 days with two men that I just don't know at all.
And none of that sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a situation.
Yeah, no. I was like, whoa. So yeah, no, it's not.
Kids call a pause nowadays. Pause.
Exactly. So I said, dude, I don't know what's going on. But anyway, we went on the trip, and what a time we had! And
it was wild.
Yeah,
The
three of us. We went, and none of us knew what we were doing. I think John probably knew the most, and you know, we just did our best to spend 3 days in the forest.
What are the trail names?
Do you remember? Dude, I absolutely remember. Well,
share the trail names.
John was the doc because my foot needed surgery on the trip. So you get your trail names. If you've never hiked the Appalachian Trail, the trail gives you the name.
Uh-huh.
Like it, you don't pick your name before you go. The trail gives it to you.
So we got Doc Goodwood.
Doc Goodwood was John for doing surgery on my foot. I was Gears because I had put together a mess of equipment.
You had so much stuff.
Dude, my backpack was overflowing. Stuff was falling off of it. I think half of my shit is still on the Appalachian Trail near Harper's Ferry.
Oh, God.
So I didn't mean to drop it, but the bag wouldn't hold. And then, so I was gearhead. And then you were looking out for us the whole time, Josh. You cared. And so you were the trail mother.
Yes, trail mother.
Which had many implications.
Yes.
But the trail mother was the boss of the trip. So
it was about 30 seconds into that trip, I fell. And mother played into why I screamed.
That's exactly what it was. I wasn't going to bring that up, but
no, we ate it.
if you can imagine, we were so excited to be on the trail. we were like little kids. We were so excited. We were probably 50 yards in, and Josh falls.
I ate it. Dude, I mean, it was raining.
And
it
your
was
leg bent. Yeah, it was raining.
Well, I remember having that big ass backpack on, and I looked to the right as I realized, okay, my back isn't broken, but I can see my foot. I was like, oh
yeah,
this ain't good. Mm-mm. And I was a much smaller man than I am now, but I was still a large man.
Mm-hmm.
And Larry and John are like,
yeah, your leg was bent in a way.
You good? Everything good? I was like, well, we're about to find out.
Yeah, it was
pop up. Everything's cool. But the thing is, if you don't know, if you're not into hiking or, you know, you don't know much about the Appalachian Trail, particularly the largest section of the Appalachian Trail, which runs through Virginia.
Yes, sir.
Our beautiful western part of our state here. In the fall, it's cloudy and rainy, and there's a lot of leaves.
A lot of
leaves. And they fall off the trees, and they cover up all the rocks and things of that nature. And so wet leaves on top of rocks, big rocks, become slightly hazardous. And my ass just took off down this trail.
You're so excited.
My ass took off on the ground, too. When I
fell. You were leading the way.
It was a hot mess. So we spent, that trip was what, 3 days?
Yeah, we were 3 days in the forest.
3 days.
3 days in the woods.
In the forest. We had one car. We all rode together.
Yeah, we had to do that. Because
Stefan
couldn't make it.
Kind of messed up that deal.
Yeah.
So we had to find some random person, a service, super cheap, to drive us back to our car.
Yeah.
But the reality is we parked the car, Jonathan, and we just started hiking north.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew at some point we would get to Harper's Ferry, West Virginia.
So we just had to follow the white blaze.
The white blaze.
It's a real three wise men situation y'all had going on.
We were following the star. We were following the star.
I will tell you that first night was one of the sketchiest nights of my life.
Yeah. It was kind of my fault because I was so excited to see the water. I wanted to see the Shenandoah River.
Yes.
So I planned for us to leave the safety of the Appalachian Trail.
Yes.
And take a side trail.
Huh?
If you're just getting started into hiking, you're interested, don't do this when you're just starting off.
Yeah. And so side trails are cool. Like there's lots of things you can go see and do. Like when you're hiking, whether it's Appalachian Trail or others, there's usually, you know, little side spots to go to.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is when you're on the Appalachian Trail, this trail runs along the top of the mountains.
Right.
So even maybe those who aren't great with like geography and stuff,
mm-hmm.
You know, just real baseline, rivers are typically not at the top of the mountains. So if you want to see the river, like mm-hmm. be up next to it, you have to go down the mountain you're hiking to find it. And then, you know, at some point, you got to go back up the mountain.
Up the mountain. Oh, gosh.
To get to where you're going. So it's our first day. my ass ate it early on. You know, we started out really hot. It's cloudy. It's rainy. It's cold. We're just like blowing through, you know, our energy. We're eating snacks a half a mile in.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we're all soft. Like, this is not, we're not hardened people to go into the woods. Various levels of experience, most of which from like 30 years prior.
Exactly. Yeah.
And we went camping.
Yeah. So how far down did you guys have to go to get to the river?
Far.
So very far.
Miles.
Very far. Yeah.
How far is Yorktown River right over there?
Oh,
look, no, but that's not the Shenandoah.
Yeah, it was a Shenandoah.
It's Shenandoah. And which was a very good river to us in years to follow. We had some fun on it.
Yes, we did.
And stuff. But we hiked down and we're running late. It's dark now. All right.
Well,
and
we didn't have any idea what it meant. 2 miles. Like I thought 2 miles was nothing.
We got this.
But dude, you got 40-pound pack on and you're hiking over rocks and terrain that's trying to kill you every step.
So it's dark now. We have our headlamps going. Some of us with flashlights because we didn't have headlamps. And we're walking down this trail heading towards what we believe to be the river. It is now pitch black.
Oh no.
We are in the woods. The noises we start hearing.
What was going on in the forest?
Are crazy. I pull my gun out.
Yes, you did.
So I'm walking, headlamp, gun. Larry's got his lights.
It sounded like there were demons in the forest.
It was the weird shit, man.
It
wasn't good. So we finally get to a flat area. And I don't even think at night we realized we were at the river.
We couldn't see anything.
It was pouring down rain. It was nuts. Yeah. Everybody, we just said,
there was no moonlight, no starlight.
We threw our tents up. We just found kind of a little flat area. We threw the tents up, said, F it. Like, we'll see you in the morning.
Yep.
That was a long ass night, man.
I didn't sleep at all.
It was storming like crazy. Larry's tent, basically his father-in-law. No. Who?
It was Tony Dominese.
Yeah. Okay. So a great guy, Tony Dominese, lends Larry all kinds of gear. And this tent, it is a vinyl coffin. Let's call it what it is.
It looked like a coffin.
It was
when I set it up.
Horrific. It was the size of half this table.
You couldn't move when you were in it. You just slid in it and then zipped your head up.
It was bad news.
And I believe that's called a body bag.
Dude, it was a body bag with a pole attached to it. I mean, it was small.
When I set it up, I was like, what have I done?
Yeah. And so it just pours, storms all night. We hear branches falling all around us. I'm like, a tree's going to fall on me and kill me. I think this is how it's going to end. This is so dumb. We wake up the next morning. I peek out the tent. And you're already up, I think.
Oh, yeah. I just stayed up all night.
And Larry is standing by the bank of the river.
The river, we had made it.
And there were, across the river is a farm. And there's all these cows. So all I can imagine what we were hearing when these cows banging all night. Because it was.
Dude, the cows like, were into cows some romance.
There was a lot of romance going on.
It was very loud.
Across the way. But we had no clue. And it was a beautiful spot, but in our minds where we were at, for me at least, I created this hell. I'm in this place where I'm going to die. Nothing good is going to come of this. What's going on? That's me. Sorry. It's just chaos. But in the morning, the sun was out.
It's beautiful.
It was beautiful. It was the coolest place. We had a little breakfast.
We were actually near a waterfall. We didn't even know it.
Didn't even know it.
There was a waterfall. The Shenandoah River was there. It was gorgeous.
It was a really cool experience. And we hiked out. Now, here's the funny thing about that first trip. And this was the first of many trips. Okay, guys, we probably, what did you, 6-7 trips altogether?
Yeah,
we've got about
we've got about 290 miles under our belt. That's a big deal. We hiked from Harper's Ferry all the way to Shenandoah National Park.
Oh, we completed the park.
Well, we got like 3 miles left. But
do we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we got all the way to...
No, you're right. We're at the Priest.
The Priest.
The Priest is on the south side
of Wintergreen.
Yeah, and that stopped us from going back.
Yeah, we looked at that and we're like, maybe next year. And that's been 7 years, maybe 8.
Yeah.
So Larry, though, that first trip. So day one, Larry's in sweatpants.
Oh, yeah.
And remind you, it's pouring down rain.
It's a bad idea.
So Larry's in sweatpants and sneakers.
Mm-hmm.
And like,
yeah, they were Skechers. Yeah, they were Skechers for the Appalachian Trail.
These aren't boots. So he already mentioned how John got his name because his foot was jacked with blisters.
Blisters from the Skechers.
So day two, he's carrying sopping wet sweatpants in his bag.
Added about 10 pounds.
I mean, to an already incredibly heavy bag. And I see Larry changed and ready to go for the day in the Skechers, but he's wearing corduroy pants.
Corduroys. It's so stupid.
I was like, nothing can absorb more water than this, the Hanes sweatpants he was wearing the day before. I was wrong. Corduroy.
You didn't know I had pants. Corduroy in the bag, baby.
No clue.
I had corduroy in the bag.
He dressed for a weekend at church camp. I mean, he had so much stuff. And but hey, I will tell you this. You knocked out that trip.
And we did it.
You were not a punk by any means.
No.
You manned up.
I was soaking wet the whole time.
It was so fun, but so miserable at the same time.
Yeah.
We had a couple little bucket list items that we had kind of like, hey, we want to do this, we want to do that. And Larry, one of the things Larry really wanted to do was like drink from like a mountain stream
straight from the stream.
So John's very analytical. John is he's very smart.
Yeah,
he knows a lot of things.
He really does.
He loves to process things.
Yes.
And John, God love him, also likes to make things way more difficult than they need to be.
Yeah. When we think about John, I feel like you're kind of in the middle. And like, I'm kind of like by night, seat of the pants.
Mm-hmm.
John's on the far extreme, analytical. And then I feel like you're right in the dead middle.
Yeah. So we're going along. And so if I'm going to choose what stream to drink out of, I'm going to let John decide which one makes the most sense.
That's
right?
Exactly right.
And he also had like wilderness survival training in the military and all that crap, which I did not.
He was the good choice.
Okay. So we're like, we'll let John decide.
Yep.
So, well, guys, you know, I think based on the pitch of this waterfall and the way the speed at which it's moving, this is good water. And we're like, shit. Okay. No problem. So John takes his cup,
mm-hmm.
scoops the water out, takes a sip. Cause John will take one for the team. John is a great dude to have in your corner. Cause he will lead the way. Yep. He will find out.
Always got to have the homie who's willing to get dysentery.
Yeah, John was John.
We were heading right down that first road.
But we all chased a little too quick behind to see if it really would affect anything. So John drinks, Larry takes it, drinks. Larry hands it to me.
And I knew you were sketchy about this. That's why. So I really wanted you to do this with me. It was important.
So Larry hands me the cup. I take the cup. I start to drink. I hesitate.
And I knew there was something
floating in the cup. Larry immediately says, "What do you say, Larry?"
I knew there was something in the cup because I had seen it, and I was like, "Josh isn't gonna drink it," and I was so sad because I wanted you to be a part of it. So I was ready for it, except I didn't have what I was gonna say ready. But you looked at it, and you saw the little thing floating in the cup. And then you looked at me and I said, "Don't worry, Josh. That is from my mouth."
Yes. And I looked at him. I'm like, okay. And I drank the whole thing. I just crushed it. And he didn't say that's from my mouth. He goes, "It's of my mouth."
I did. I said, "Don't worry, Josh. That's of my mouth."
That's of my mouth. And I was like, okay. And
well, that must be totally fine.
Yeah, it must be fine.
Yep.
Why of your mouth was better than the stream.
Yeah. And what black stuff was coming out of us.
And that's where the pandemic started.
Probably.
It is.
We were ground zero for COVID, I guess.
Oh, wow.
But man, that was such a crazy trip. And that's one of my most favorite memories. I mean, there's so many from our times on the trail and stuff, but that damn cup story, I don't know how many times I've told that over the years. And we have video of that.
Yeah,
Remember when we made our poor families come over to the house and I cooked? I made barbecue and we played like the 45-minute video of our trip.
I recorded the trip and then I edited it and I put terrible music behind it because it was the free music that came with the camera. Yeah. It was like a banjo.
Oh, my God.
And we made everybody watch it.
And they were so bored. Everyone couldn't have given a crap.
Nobody cared, but we loved it.
We laughed so hard. I mean, it was a tremendous video. We should actually, if I can find it, we might have posted it on Facebook. If I can find it, we might put some clips and promo for this week.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
That would be a really fun thing to remember.